It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 500. That's 500 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. As always, thanks so much for listening. First things first, of course, I have to apologize for my voice. I had oral surgery that my voice still has not recovered from, and so I sound a little different than I wanted to be in this episode, which is a landmark one, but the show must go on. So I thought the best way to celebrate this milestone was to go ahead and have a great doubleheader. First up is a brand new guest here at the podcast, Ray Anthony Height. He's doing on Zoop.gg a comic called Corner Man, and it's described this way. Superpowers don't come with fight training. That's where Jason Drexler comes in. As the world's greatest fighter, Drex mastered thousands of martial arts as well as the strategy needed to fell any opponent. With no interest in being a superhero himself, he became the government's go-to for training their superpowered heroes how to throw a punch properly. For years now, Drex has been semi-retired, training Saudi princesses and eccentric actresses. But now they need him to hang up his training mitts and go into the field for the first time to mount a rescue mission single-handedly. It's a great book, and it's right now going to be going on until the 29th of this month. But don't wait until then, as I always like to say. Be sure to get in there and support it. We talk about diversity in comics and how he's doing something that I greatly admire. So I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. Then everything wraps up with the return of Braden Cox, who has a new book called Sever being done on Kickstarter. And it's described this way. The story of Sever follows Chloe Williams, otherwise known as Ellipsis, who is an aspiring metal musician finishing up her last year of high school. She plays in a band with a misfit group of friends. And the story goes on from there. We talk about what Braden's been up to and how the Kickstarter is doing. This Kickstarter is going to end on October 2, a Saturday, at 5:04 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Just like with the previous one, don't wait until that time to try to get in on this great book. Be sure to do it right now and enjoy the storytelling he's got in mind. We catch up with other things he's got going as well, so I'm sure you're also going to enjoy what he has to say. There's a lot to get through in this episode, a special one for sure. So let's get on with the show.
Corner Man! Corner Man! Corner Man! Corner Man!
Put up your guard!
That yard and yard!
It's great to welcome to the podcast Ray Anthony Height from Corner Man, which is on Zoop.gg right now and has got a great program going on. I don't know what we call it, a project or what we call it, but I have already backed it. I put my money in, and as we're talking, you've already got over 50 supporters.
Oh, that's great.
And I think, Ray, that's a testament to your stuff. Of course, you and your cohort in there are pretty well known, I think, in the comics community. You've done Star Wars, I think, if I'm not mistaken. And you've done, gosh, what haven't you done? That's the question.
Wayne, there is such a lot. It's so many things I haven't done, but I'm gonna work down that list for sure.
Okay, because your partner in editorial consult is Chris Robinson.
Yes.
And a couple of things I want to do. I want to talk about, you did an interview with Jordan, who is the head of the site, or one of the heads of the site. And in that thing, you described what a corner man is, which was something I didn't know until I heard that interview. Can you describe to people what a corner man is?
Well, if anyone's ever seen any of the Rocky movies, so in the first, I want to say 1 through 3, the character, his trainer, Mick, was his corner man. Mm-hmm. So that was Rocky Balboa's corner man. He's the guy that's in the corner, who's usually your trainer, or one of, who is kind of, you know, reminding you, you know, hey, these are your techniques. You got to watch out for this, and you got to, you're doing great. You know, he's your coach. He's your man in the corner. So when you go back to sit down in the ring, he's the guy that is cheering you on, telling you what to work on, and getting you ready for that next round.
Okay, look out for his left.
Or yeah, right, exactly.
Those kind of things. Let me, just because I think it adds a little bit to it, there's a description on Zoop.gg. And I always say that because there are other Zoops besides the .gg, and I want to make sure people get to the right place. It says, when the world's superheroes are captured, who do you send to rescue them? The man that trained them all, Coach Jason Drexler, is dragged out of retirement and into the spotlight to show there's no substitute for skill. He taught them all everything they know, not everything he knows. This 32-page issue number one is the first appearance of the new baddest man in comics and beyond. I like that. That's a great description. It's good stuff for that. So I'm kind of interested because he taught he teaches heroes, and I assume because we're in the Corner Man universe, you're going to introduce other heroes for us to meet.
Oh, yeah. There's a whole universe. Well, I want to say a whole universe, but there's in the world of Corner Man, there are definitely a certain group of heroes in there. It's not as, let's say, as vast and as rich with superheroes as the Marvel and DC universe. But, you know, Chris Robinson and I, we're really trying to craft something that gives you the sense of what to expect, you know, the world in a way that gives you an idea of you know, where Jason Drexler is coming from, you know, what he's dealing with, and the people around him in his world.
One of the things I really appreciate, and anybody who listens to this podcast know I am big on this, I'm so grateful that, you know, the main character is a man of color. And I'm also really grateful that you're not just stuffing him into an existing costume. I get so mad about Miles Morales being turned into a Spider-Man, and it just drives me crazy. That just feels like a lazy way to do superhero storytelling when it comes to diversity. So many characters, I think, are so great when they're developed on their own, and you do world building. And that's something that you're doing here quite a lot, and I think it's really something special. And I think the character, as well as the story, are going to be something that we really are going to treasure because of that. So I would just want to congratulate you on making that happen, because that just doesn't happen very often. So that's, it's great when I see it, and I just have to say you've done a good job with that.
Well, thank you so much, Wayne. I mean, that's really where we're coming from with it. We actually just want to... So something from a different point of view. That's where all these new stories come from, right? There are things that we're trying to do that's just different. You know, here's the thing. Most of these characters, they get their superpowers, and they might fumble a little bit in the beginning, or they train themselves. And that requires a little bit of know-how of what you're getting. You know, but in most cases, you don't know how to throw a punch. If you're a 90-pound weakling getting bullied every day, and then all of a sudden you get spider powers, it doesn't necessarily mean you know how to fight. You're just a guy with powers who doesn't know how to throw a punch. And it takes a lot. Like, you're in a lot of cases, you know, there's a lot of fighting villains, you know, some type of opposition. You know, superheroes do more than that. You know, they save lives. They, you know, hold up burning buildings and things that don't have combatants. But anybody who's read any superhero stories long enough knows that there are physical battles involved. So who trains these heroes to do that? Some people already accomplished the training. You know, if someone was in the military for a long period of time, they have a certain level of training. You know, they may not be experts in the martial art per se, but they have some combat skills. And then others who, you know, let's take Shang-Chi. His whole thing is combat. His whole thing is martial arts. So, you know, that's built into who he is and what he is. And same thing with Iron Fist. But, you know, when we talk about somebody like Batman, you know, DC does a great job of showing who Batman's mentors and senseis were. And I love that journey because you have to think just how amazing are these people who trained the Batman, who is supposedly unbeatable, you know, a tactician. So we're telling their story. We're telling the story of Mick in the corner in his prime and before he meets Rocky, you know.
There are heroes in this universe, and now there are apparently going to be bad guys, too. What was it like to develop both the heroes and the bad guys in the Corner Man universe?
Well, with the heroes, since our main protagonists are Jason Drexler, his sister Andrea, Agent Bozon, you know, there are our main three that we're going to begin this journey with. There is a big bad bad guy, but he has minions, and those characters, they're kind of fun because we kind of get to be, Chris and I have to be, you know, we're kind of creative in that. Like they could be anything, and as long as they fit the narrative, because we already know what the big bad is all about. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, I don't want to reveal much about that, but with his minions, they're going to be fun. I'll tell you that much. They're definitely going to be a lot of fun because who they are, in most cases, are people from Jason's past. So, yeah.
So are they going to be, I don't want to spoil anything.
Yeah, I think I might have said a little too much there myself.
I was going to ask if there are former heroes in this and the bad guys or not, but that might be spoiling the beans on that.
A little bit. So yeah. Let's just bypass that part. But I would definitely say that, you know, through the villains, you'll definitely get to know who Jason is. And some of the heroes, but, you know, you'll definitely get to know who he is.
Do we get to see how Jason learns the techniques he does?
You know, in the Zoop campaign with the exhibition match, maybe a little, but let's say it's popular enough and we do well enough and we launch into a series at some point and it gets picked up, you know, by Boom or Image or, you know, someone else like that. We will definitely going to kind of delve into that. That'd probably be in the first arc for sure. Cause we want to continue with a lot of these stories.
Okay. I'm really interested. Are there going to be people of color as well involved in all this? Cause that interests me so much because there are several comic series that I really love that are developed by people of color and include people of color in them. And I always find that so much more interesting. So to hear that really encourages me. I'm going to be really anxious to see that. Now, as far as that goes, are you drawing from your own experience or maybe Chris's experience in your real life experiences when you develop these characters?
Definitely in a lot of ways. Although, the main character, Jason Drexler, is more inspired by the actor and martial artist, Michael Jai White, who was Spawn. And he actually, you know, is a brilliant martial artist, very humble, but he's truly an incredible, you know, martial artist, period. Mm-hmm. And person, you know, he's a genuine person. He's very humble. Very matter of fact, and very, he knows himself, and he's, you know, you could really feel that energy in his interviews, and on screen. I follow him on Instagram. I'd follow his career a long time ago. But he was definitely an inspiration, for the character. But we're also going to be pulling from our own, like we already started, Chris and I pulling from our own experiences and our own likes, some of our favorite people in entertainment. You know, I think like Agent Bozon is kind of at least physically inspired by Jay Burchell. So, you know, we have that going. And some of the, you know, the characters we have kind of coming up. And then the backstories. The backstories are where we're going to draw a lot from our own experience from as well.
See, that fascinates me because I hate to say it, but it's true, is that I learn a lot when I run into comics like this, because, and that's why I always like to ask that question, you know, are you weaving your own life experiences in there? Because as somebody who comes from a different life experience, for me, I always find that really educational and inspiring to see other areas of life and people's other lives coming and being presented to me in an interesting way. And so to me, I'm going to be fascinated to see, you know, what kind of things you choose and what you draw from, because I think it's going to be, I really am interested to see. I don't want to spoil things. I'm kind of dancing around the subject, but I'm going to be, you know, part of me wants to say, well, what parts of your life did you
do? I know. Well, you know, I'll say certain things like, because Jason's journey is mostly of one, you know, I can say this, I can't get into details, but basically what he is someone who gives back by touching others with his abilities to bring out the best. I mean, he's a coach, you know, he's a trainer, and usually the greatest skill a trainer can see is the potential in another person. And their job as that coach is to bring out the very best, to bring that potential into actuality. Right. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be any in the martial arts world. It could be something else. Like, you know, Jason could see someone working on a car. Let's say he goes to get his car fixed, mm-hmm. He's checking out the mechanic and he's doing all these different things. And one of his, you know, abilities is really to see this person for who they are. And he could tell you, you know, you're a brilliant mechanic, but I think you'd probably be an excellent chef based on the way your hands move and whatever. Mm-hmm. And then the mechanic would say, oh my God, I always wanted to be a chef, but it didn't work out. And I ended up fixing cars. Mm-hmm. He's that type. That's kind of an innate skill he has.
So what's a skill rather than a power?
It might borderline on both. It depends on the way you read it.
Interesting. Now, as far as the visuals go, is Jason, and maybe because I'm just ignorant of the subject matter that you're drawn from, is he based on somebody in real life, or did the artist come up with that separately? How did that come to be?
Well, yeah, it was kind of like I was touching on earlier just a little bit about the actor, martial artist, Michael Jai White. He's right. Based off him. So some of his features are a lot like Michael's. Mm-hmm. Some of them are like people I know. Like when I was younger, you know, I did martial arts myself, and there was a sensei I had. Mm-hmm. And he is a sensei Stewart, and it was Eyes of the Hawk karate. Mm-hmm. He had this gray streak in his hair. It always looked cool to me. Mm-hmm. He's another person I thought about. But yeah, I mean, so it's kind of like he's a combo. But, you know, I think he favors Michael probably a little bit more. Okay. It depends on how I draw him.
Okay. Now, the question, of course, I got too is when I see him on the covers and in the artwork and stuff, he's not wearing a costume. He's basically a regular guy. Is he going to wear the coach outfit, or is he going to – I'll see you again here. I'm trying to spoil stuff, and I don't necessarily want to.
No. I feel free to ask me anything.
Well, because like I see on the covers, he's wearing the jacket that says coach on it.
Yeah.
When he gets into trying to rescue the heroes, is he going to continue to look like that, or is he going to look differently?
He's going to wear exactly what's comfortable for him.
So it's going to be like a utility outfit, something that helps him in what he's doing.
Yeah. So, you know, but I was thinking kind of the things in life isn't the clothes we wear when we go to a corporate office and we're sitting at a desk and we put in our suit. That's a costume. That's a costume mm-hmm. for that job. Mm-hmm. You know, our police, mm-hmm. you know, we call it a uniform, you know, is it a uniform or is it a costume?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause I always think that it'd be better to wear something that was more helpful than attention grabbing.
Exactly. So Jason is, he doesn't care for the theatrics of the superhero world. You know, he definitely has a certain feeling, which is the reason why he would never go out into the field just to do any superheroing on his own. Mm-hmm. I mean, not even on his own, just, you know, in general. I mean, he feels like he can do more good on the streets of his neighborhood by maybe, you know, handing cash to a mother who needs help taking care of her baby, or quietly and discreetly stopping a robbery at his local, you know, market. Mm-hmm. You know, he does small things, or teaching a class of kids who would otherwise not have anything else to do but get in trouble. Mm-hmm. You know, so he's a hero in that regard, mm-hmm. at least in his day-to-day life. Mm-hmm. But when you're forced to put these extraordinary abilities on display to, because that's really what he's doing. He prefers to be low-key and not show people the world. We have more than enough superheroes. You don't need one more. Mm-hmm. And he feels like, in a way, and Chris and I talk about this, his ideology is, you know, there's enough of them out there, and they're helping people, I guess, in his own way. Does he agree with the things they do? Not usually, you know, mm-hmm. not typically. But if he trains them to be safe, to worry about others, and to be more in control of what they're capable of, then there will be less collateral damage. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I've been watching the America's Got Talent, and they've got a martial arts group, and they're always, even though they go around and doing like kicking of boards and stuff like that, they're always kind of trying to say that there are more important things than victory.
Yes.
And I thought that you know, that makes me think of what you're talking about here, is that maybe he's not necessarily into it to win, but he's into it to accomplish a goal.
Right. And it's all about the goal, you know, because there's different types of winning. Mm-hmm.
So that's interesting, because, you know, I'm so used to superhero comics where winning is everything.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's nice to see a story that's not going to be quite that focused on that. It'd be nice to see, because there's a lot of things that we can accomplish without beating somebody into submission.
And that's exactly it. I mean, and he would prefer not to do it. He's already done it. You know, he was a master of so many different martial arts by the time he was 25, because he just has a natural talent for that. And then you get to a point where it's you realize, and that's what separates true masters. It's like, I don't have to go around. Like, once you've beaten everybody, what do you do? Does your life become empty? Or when you know, just by looking at an opponent, this is not much of a challenge. Mm-hmm. What do you do? Do you is your life now over, or do you find new purpose? You know, to use all of that in a different way.
What you're saying brings up another question, and I don't know whether it's probably something that'll be revealed in the book, but how old is Jason?
He's early to mid 50s.
Okay. So he's experienced a lot in his life.
Oh yes, already. He definitely has. He's probably been around the world several times over. You know, met a ton of people, and that's going to be another fun part of the book. Or the series itself. And that's why it's so important to get this one kind of like premiere introduction primer book out, exhibition match, because you'll see a man who's 55 years old, who's been all around the world and has mastered probably about 1,000 different martial arts techniques. Mm-hmm. You know, by the time he's 25 years old, has lived a lot of life. And this is a 55-year-old man, and he's retired. You know, he retired from training heroes, period. Mm-hmm. You know, he was done. He thought he was done, as we all do. And he's been actually helping to train celebrities. Mm-hmm. You know how you see these celebrity trainers, mm-hmm. you know, and that's, so that's what he does. You know, just kind of like help his family out, you know, mm-hmm. pay some bills and stuff like that. He doesn't want to be a rich man. He just wants to take care of his, you know, his family, his neighborhood and stuff like that. And he can do it in that way without having to beat up 100 people.
Do you know how different that is from what your standard comic does?
Yes.
I mean, most comics are based on late teens, early 20s. You know, the mutants and the X-Men are all that. That's when their powers come to be in that age group. And so many things are based around that. And Batman was supposedly always going to be 33 years old, I remember reading.
Oh, yeah, forever.
And the thing that gets me is, isn't that dull after a while? I like to read of different people in different stages of life. And you're talking about him in his 50s. Mm-hmm. That's really something new to me. I haven't read a lot of that. You know, there was a character in the JSA, Wildcat, was a boxer. And
yes,
I always liked the fact that he was older and yet he was still a boxer with those kind of things. But it sounds to me like he is a much different character than what I've seen before. And that, of course, that gets my attention right away.
Well, that's what I was hoping, because we always see the point of view of, you know, we see these stories where you have, it's the journey of the young man. Mm-hmm. Who has a teacher, who's someone who is trying to be his guide, his mentor. But it's really the young man or the young woman's journey. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you start to think, here is this, sometimes the mentor is grizzled. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're unassuming. Mm-hmm. But they always play a role as, you know, a parental figure or the Jiminy Cricket or whatever to kind of guide the young person on the path, especially when they stray. Well, you never really see what goes on the other end, because that's why you get stories about a character like Alfred. Mm-hmm. Just think, you know, Bruce has done all of these different things, and yet Alfred has endured. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's things now that are coming out about him. I won't say now, but they've kind of been in canon for a little bit, where he used to work for MI6 or, you know, mm-hmm. all these different backgrounds. And then you're kind of like, oh man, you know, Alfred is kind of a badass. Like Alfred, mm-hmm. Alfred's pretty amazing, you know, and he, mm-hmm. he knows how to stitch wounds and he mm-hmm. can fix the Batmobile, and he's, mm-hmm. he's got a wealth of knowledge, mm-hmm. you know? So let's do a story about Alfred when he was young, you know?
Well, there's a show called Pennyworth that I actually kind of enjoy that is him as a younger person. Of course, that's going into the stereotype back to the younger person. Actually like seeing Alfred as an older character.
Me too.
I like to see when he does things, and you know, he can figure out what's going on sometimes faster than Batman can. And I'm always kind of like, that's why he's there. He's there to kind of help when Bruce can't figure something out. Then Alfred comes in and says, "Well, wait a second. What about this?"
Yep.
And Batman
is always
like,
point of view.
He's stunned when Alfred comes up with something, but that's why he's there. A more mature perspective is something, you know, the younger X-Men, you know, they've got Professor X and stuff like that, but, you know, we need to see a more mature perspective. I would much rather see somebody like that, you know, do those kind of things and make the world a better place rather than punching and kicking all the time.
And there will be that, Wayne. He's definitely an action-packed, you know, kind of devastating fighter, and he will show that. But the thing is, there's a maturity mm-hmm. to it, and it's not to say that we have a couple of young characters as part of the protagonist. That's mm-hmm. the beauty of having an ensemble cast, mm-hmm. because you can focus on different stories to appeal to different demographic, mm-hmm. you know, so we have those characters, but mm-hmm. these are characters that are living in Jason Drexler's world. Mm-hmm. You know, it's so they're all kind of through his lens, mm-hmm. You know, and you'll see that instead of it being the other way around, where the young character, it's, you know, they're looking at this old mentor, you know, mm-hmm. But it's their story. No, not here. It's all this, you know, 50 plus year old, this middle-aged guy's story, and it's through his lens.
That's so much more interesting to me, because I've read, I don't know how many hundreds of stories through the lens of the X-Men or you know, younger Teen Titans or Batman or any of those kinds of things of younger characters. I'd like somebody who could look at something and say, wait a second, I've seen that before.
Yes.
You know, that would be something I would really be interested to see, that when they say, wait a second. And then maybe a little flashback to show when they saw this and they learn how they know how to deal with this. That to me is so much more interesting than people who are stumbling through and, you know, and trying to figure things out. If somebody actually knows a little here and there, I just think that would be so much more fun to read.
Oh, yeah, because there's something about experience that is undeniable. That's why a character like Yoda has endured.
Mm-hmm. You know? Now, I've got to ask you a question, though, because when it comes to this book, Chris, his role is editor?
Editor and co-creator, co-writer.
Okay. But so you're a co-writer and artist?
Yes.
Okay. Now, of course, I always have to ask people, are you more of a writer? Are you a storyteller? Or are you more of an artist? What's the part that you enjoy the most?
The way that question was put to me, I would say storyteller. I enjoy storytelling the most. Mm-hmm. I'm more proficient at the art, but I would consider myself more of a storyteller. The writing is, I'm going to say fairly new in a professional way. Mm-hmm. I've been writing stories and thinking of stuff, my whole life. Mm-hmm. I never sat down and tried to sell it before. Well, that's not true. When I was 19, I wrote and drew a couple of books that we self-published. So I haven't not written. I've written before and have published things before. But as far as the upper echelon of professionals, like for Marvel or DC or whatever, mm-hmm. that's, few and far between. I haven't written anything for those companies. I have, but I have published things that I have written myself before. So
cool.
But that's how I'll answer that.
Okay, because I bet moving forward you'd like to continue this role.
Absolutely, Wayne. Absolutely.
Now, see, you've tasted the forbidden fruit, and now you've got to keep going doing this now, because now you're not going to be denied when it comes to doing that.
Oh no, I enjoyed the work of someone like Frank Miller. Who's mm-hmm. You're the so with Frank, I want to say Frank is a writer artist. Mm-hmm. There are artist writers, which I think I fall into. I think mm-hmm. I fall into more of an artist writer, where art is first mm-hmm. for me mentally, and then it's the writing part. But I think Frank, I want to say Frank probably is more of a writer artist, where the writing part maybe is his strongest, but yeah. his art
is unusual.
Yeah, but I think he's used a couple of styles, because mm-hmm. think about Dark Knight Returns. I thought mm-hmm. that art was fantastic. Mm-hmm. And it's also one of those books, those graphic novels that has endured.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like Jeff Lemire too. Jeff Lemire sometimes he does both. He writes yes. and draws. And so I when I see his name on a book, I particularly like it when he's doing the drawing. Even though I find it a little harder to understand sometimes, I feel like I get the whole impact when he does it that way. And maybe that's the way with you too, is that yeah. maybe when you get to do both sides of the across both sides of the fence, you actually can make the storytelling a little more in depth.
I agree. It turns out to be the story I want to tell versus the story I'm helping someone else tell.
Mm, okay. Because you always suggest, but of course you don't get the final answer in that.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And if you have a great collaborator, then it's a work that you both have done together. Mm-hmm. And it feels like you. It feels like one unified voice, but it's the creation of two voices or four voices or whomever, because let's not exclude if there's an inker, there's a colorist and a letterer. Mm-hmm. It's all one voice. When you read a comic and it's seamless, mm-hmm. then that's a work of art. If mm-hmm. if something gets chunky or staggered in some point of reading a comic, mm-hmm. Or mm-hmm. disjointed, something's off, and you want it to be smooth, and you want the reader to have a good time, and you want them to come back for more. And that's how you've really done your job, all the jobs.
Mm. So this is the first issue. It's got 32 pages. I'm sure this is going to be a successful project, and we're going to go on to that. How far are you on creating this 32-page first issue?
Well, right now we're pretty busy. We're getting the pages in now. I'm actually in the middle of drawing pages. We're getting more and more into it. And as the campaign goes on, which is really cool, you'll be able to see more pages go up. And that's the fun part of bringing the fans into it too, because they can see the process, and people love that process. You know, I never got a, I never saw just how much until I was on the other end of it, because I know when I was reading more than I was working on them, I love that process. You know, you get a comic and you see the pages in creation and you see the script and you see how it all starts kind of gelling together. That's such a cool thing to see, especially after you enjoyed the finished product.
So you're kind of a corner man.
Yeah, do you know what? Yes, I definitely am. I think it's the best seat in the house.
Because, you know, it's so interesting to me because, you know, the industry is very different industry now than when you and I were much younger. Yes. There are a lot of people who are making comics, and not only DC or Marvel, even only Image. There are all these different companies all going along and doing stuff. And here you are kind of schooling people on this is how it gets done and done right. And I always appreciate that when I see that from somebody who knows how to do it. If you can actually share on how you make that happen, that is so, that's why a lot of time on this podcast I devote to that, to trying to get to people like you on who can make people understand the process better. And you know, you're looking at it from the writer artist part. There are also people I've had on who have talked about the, you know, the printing. How do you get it? How do you find an artist? How do you this, that, and the other? All these other things are all involved, and I'm telling you, there are a lot of people out there who are making comics, and I'm glad you're the corner man for a lot of us and a lot of people out there who are doing it, and you're kind of showing us this is how you do it right.
Well, that's how I couldn't have done this without Chris Robinson, because, you know, he was my editor at Marvel for Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur and Marvel Comics Presents, and he also is someone who believes in creators and the process and creating the best work from all parties. So, you know, I could say, I mean, we're both corner men, you know, because he's definitely been my corner man while I was at Marvel, and you know, and now, you know, now he's my partner in crime, and you know, I absolutely love having him because he brings so much to the table. When it comes to not just creation, but the direction, right? There's a certain level of direction, because I'll have all these ideas and it's almost like, you know, playing cards. And you know how when you first buy the deck of cards, they're all in a specific order. And after you play and play and play, they get out of order as things go. Well, Chris Robinson is, as far as I'm concerned, he's the guy that, let's say, all my deck is completely out of order, and he does like this almost magician trick, and now they're back exactly in the same order as they were in the package, and now it makes sense. it all makes total sense. And I'm like, okay, that's exactly what I was trying to say. Oh, wait, no, it's actually better than what I was trying to say. So, yeah, it's that kind of stuff that we enjoy.
See, that's so amazing and so wonderful, because I've helped some folks put together indie comics, and it's an interesting thing. I've kind of been a person to be bounced off of. The person that was working on a comic, he brought me a page and he said, "Is this funny?" And I got to the end of the page and I said, "You know, it could be funnier." And he went back and rewrote it and made it much funnier. And I thought the book that I've been helping him with and other books and stuff like that. I like it when people don't tell me the story. Let me read them as they come along, so I get like kind of a reader's experience.
Yes.
And so for me, I like that. And I always tell them, don't tell me. Don't. This is why I'm even now, like talking to you, I'm worried about spoilers and stuff like that, because I want people to enjoy the experience of reading the comic. Like, I'm looking forward to it. I'm really excited about seeing this book more and more.
Wayne, I'm the same way. I want to read it. And if I can interpret it the way you meant for it to be interpreted, then you and I both have a win-win.
Now, a couple of things we need to make sure we get in there is that project from zoop.gg/c/cornerman is going to end on September the 29th.
Yes.
And that's the important thing. But don't wait till then. That's not the thing to do. Do it now.
Please don't. We're trying to hit that number.
Because, you know, anybody who does crowdfunding knows that there's like the daily heart attack where you refresh the screen and the number is the same. And you go, no one's ever going to support this again. It's ruined. But, you know, there's a lot of people who wait till the end and I never understand that. I want to get in on the beginning because there's a lot of good stuff. Like you offered a bunch of really good things right at the beginning, and I got in on that. And so for me, I if you're listening to this and you still got a couple of weeks, don't sit back and go, I got plenty of time. Now is the time to get on and support this. Go to zoop.gg/c/cornerman and get on there and support. And there's a lot of wonderful things. In fact, let's talk about a thing or two real quickly, because I think there's a couple of really wonderful there's some, by the way, that are already gone. There was early
bird. Oh, yeah, they're already gone.
The $40 early bird special bundle's gone. The $400 Star Wars Dr. Aphra number 6, page 18 original art has gone. But there are a lot of wonderful things still to be had, and including the book. You can get a blank sketch cover. You can get the cover A, cover B. I like the cover A myself. But the,
oh, okay.
Cover That's B good. Is good today. Do you have a preference? Because you did both of those, right?
I did. And then we have a Michael Shelfer cover, which I think is great too.
Yeah, well, they're all great, but I like the A. Of course, you're trying to do something different, but I think that looks that really communicates.
So what do you like about that one?
It communicates something to me. I mean, in the B, which I like. He's kind of on it. He's like kneeling in front of some hardware or something that I don't understand what it is yet. I'm sure when you read the book, we will. But on the other one, he's kind of showing an action pose. And as such, and the look in his eyes and stuff, a little close up, I like that. I think that says to me something is going to happen and pay attention because it's going to be good.
Well, that's good. Yeah, because I did cover A first. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, that's not true. I started cover B long before A, and I wanted to get something done and up pretty quick. You know, as you can see, B is a little bit more complicated because there's a lot going on there. Mm-hmm. But A, it kind of gets the point across a little bit more as far as with who he is. But B gives you more background because what's in front of him are superhero paraphernalia.
Mm. Okay, really interesting. See, the A's, the eyes just pop right out at me.
Oh, yeah, he's looking right at you.
Yeah, you know, and there's a fist coming right at me. Now, the first thing my head says is, look out. Pay attention. So I really like that. You know, so that's really good. I mean, I don't think I'd ever be able to duck in time. But it's just a great action-oriented cover that I really, really like. And so the other ones are great. I mean, don't get me wrong. They're interesting, but I like it's interesting because I do like a little action in the story. I don't mind when there's dialogue involved, when it propels the story forward. But I like sometimes when things are happening and I want to look at it.
Oh, yeah.
Because sometimes, I hate to say it, there are certain writers who love verbosity, and there are some pages I turn the page and I look and I go, there's this gray blob looking at me full of text, and I'm going, I wonder if I could skip this page and maybe something will tell me later on what was on all this text.
Yeah, for sure.
I hate to do that. I know they sat and wrote all that stuff, but sometimes I just think that I can probably pick things up out of the action instead. But I don't think you're going to do those kinds of things. I have a feeling that artist writer business is going to try to propel things visually as much as possible. So, which I like.
We're going to do the best we can. I think, you know, with the combination of Chris and I working on it, we're going to have enough dialogue, good dialogue and information going on, but we definitely plan to hit you over the head with some bombastic action.
Oh, good. That'll be fun. Couple other things we need to make sure I mention that this project will be successful if you get $8,500.
Yes.
That's important to point out. We need to get there. We're not there yet, obviously. That's why we're talking about doing it now. And again, I say, get out there and support now. I don't think we can say that enough, because there's just too many people I know who like to sit on the sidelines and say, well, let's see if they really need me. And I'm going like, they need you. I can tell you that right now. Get out there and do that stuff. So,
and you need this. I mean, it is a different type of character here.
Yeah, a different kind of story. The whole thing to me is just, it's like nothing I've read before, and that always gets my attention. So I really like that. As far as like getting the book, you said you're in the process of working in to show the pages.
Yes.
As we talked, September 29th being the deadline to raise the money. Is by then, do you think you'll have the book done, or do you think that most of the book will be done, or how will you be by that point?
Well, you'll definitely see at least the first five pages up. I dare say, I don't want to put a date on it, but you know, it'll be before the deadline for sure. And then we can always, the beauty of Zoop is that we can always update as we go. So even when the campaign's over, you get to see more and more. It doesn't stop.
Great. Well, it's so exciting. I'm so interested as to the Corner Man universe. I'm just going to be so at a Corner Man verse, or however you want to call it. But the kinds of things that you guys are creating, I'm just dying to dive into and really enjoy. So it's going to be great. So be sure, don't wait until the 29th of this month. Be sure to get out there and support this now. Again, I want to point out zoop.gg/c/cornerman. And I'm really looking forward. Are there other projects? I'm sure this is going to keep you guys busy for a while. But as far as other things, Ray, are there other things that you got on your table as well?
I do. I'm working on Luke Cage's City on Fire with writer Hoche Anderson. And what else am I doing? I'm still doing Star Wars covers. So, and that's also available on Zoop, as you had pointed out before. You know, there's original artwork there that people can snag because I didn't plan on. I had a buyer, and I had a certain amount of pages that I was going to give the buyer, who had already spoken for a lot of the Star Wars pages. But I took these specifically for the Zoop campaign. So. You know, that's a big one right there. But yeah, so Luke Cage, some Star Wars stuff. There's some other things on the pipeline, Wayne, that are brewing that'll probably come to light in the next, I would say, couple months or so.
Creator owned or
no, it's Marvel, work for hire stuff.
Okay. Yeah, there's you could do worse than Marvel.
I could.
So I'm sure that's going to be great. It's going to be good to see. All these things are going to be great. Your artwork really just, like I said, those eyes are still looking at me, you know.
And all I can say is trying to teach you how to throw a punch, Wayne.
Well, not only that, he's saying, get in there and start. And so I've already supported it. You know, he's still going to keep staring at me until I up my pledge and stuff. So it's just wonderful stuff. And I just think, Ray, that this is going to be one of those books that's going to be great fun. I hope it finds a home real quick. And I hope it'd be fun if this would come out. Well, of course, you got those other things going on.
Well, we have a plan. It should show the time span of when it's supposed to come out. I want to say it's like November.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the book will be done and ready to go and getting out, I want to say, in November.
Okay, good. Just in time for the holidays.
Yeah.
Good timing. That's a good. Anything that comes out just before the holidays, I think, is a wise move. Don't do it in January, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah.
I always see these holiday books that come late, and they come in January, and then I have a Santa Claus book in January. And I always go, you know, that was not a good idea to do that. Nobody wants Santa Claus in January. So
no, we're done with Santa by then.
That's right. That's right. But we won't be done with Corner Man, hopefully. We'll have lots of good things to watch. And I just tell you, Ray, that I really am excited about this book. I want to see this. I can't wait for it to come out. Man, it's going to be lots of fun to read. And I just,
Wayne, we need about 300 more people just like you.
Yeah. Well, I know they're out there. We just got to get them to get in there and start signing get sign in and go to Zoop and .gg and get this thing supported, because we need more variety in our reading, like as I'm always saying. And this is one of those ways to accomplish that purpose. So, Ray, it's just great talking with you. And, man, I cannot wait for Corner Man to hit my mailbox, my email box, all kinds of ways to get to read this book. I'm just dying to see it. It looks like a great book.
Oh, thank you so, so much. And, you know, Chris and I are just like ready to give it to you. We're super excited about this. I told Chris that wouldn't it be nice in 2022 if we're starting the series, you know?
Wow. The year of Corner Man.
That would be really great. Oh, yeah. I love that. I mean, if we just, you know, that'd be fantastic. But we need this first one to go. We need the funding.
That's right. Again, it's zoop.gg/c/cornerman. I know people get say, you say it too many times. No, I don't. We got to go. There might be that one person out there who hasn't done it yet and hears it, finally says, okay, I'm going to go do it.
Yeah.
So be sure to get out there and support it. Ray, you're doing wonderful stuff. I cannot wait for this to hit. It's going to be great fun to read.
Thank you.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
It's always a pleasure to talk with Braden Cox from Reclaiming Godhood, among other great things. And right now, Braden, you've got a Kickstarter going on for a book called Sever One. And how's it going for you?
We're doing good. We're doing good so far. We're about, I want to say, a third of the way.
Yep.
Right now. So,
yep.
And it's only been active for 2 days, so we're doing well.
Good.
You know, yeah, a lot better than I thought we would be doing.
Yeah, we're recording this a little advanced too, so just so people know. Let's get the specifics out of the way. Some people always get mad at me because I don't say this soon enough. The project will be funding, if it reaches its goal of $1,500, on Saturday, October 2 at 5:04 in the morning, which is an interesting time to wrap up. But while I'm doing the reading, let me read what the book is about, just to let people know. It's called Sever One, a romance horror story featuring a power-hungry necromancer cult and a group of misfit friends that started a metal band. And this is one of three, right? This is the first one.
Yeah, so it will be a three-part miniseries. This is the first one, and there will be two more afterwards.
Okay. And as we said, this ends in early October. Don't wait until early October, however, to pledge. Get in there and support it. I've already supported it, and I'm really looking forward to see this, because your books are always interesting. Now, this is a very different direction from some of your previous books. So this is because, you know, God, Reclaiming Godhood had a lot to do with God figures, and now we're on the other end of the spectrum. So how come you went this different direction with this book?
So, it's not, I just wanted to try something new. Like, I've been doing mythology books for so long now, and I kind of wanted to leave my comfort zone, and I thought, I kind of came up with this story, and I played with it a little bit more, and I ended up kind of basing it off of a lot of my high school experiences, and, like, I put a lot of more heart into this book than I feel, than, you know, the action that I put into Reclaiming Godhood. So this book is And this book turned out really great. I'm really proud of how this book is turning out. And it definitely is the opposite of Reclaiming Godhood, whereas like Reclaiming Godhood is a lot more action. It's a lot more fast paced. Sever is very more horror inspired and romance based.
Mm-hmm. Because if you watch the video, which I did, I watched a little bit, and that's how I learned a little bit of stuff about the series. Is it talks about the fact that there's LGBTQ plus. I'm always convinced I'm leaving stuff out when I say that. That particular thing, there's that involved with it. Looks like the cover is colored, but the inside is black and white, which is another interesting choice.
I kind of sticking kind of true to like the horror. I kind of thought it would be cool to do black and white. Mm-hmm. However, if we do meet our goal, one of the stretch goals will be to bring the book into color.
Okay, pretty cool. Because you know, a lot of times. It's the cost of color that is prohibitive.
That's exactly what it is. You know, a lot of it is color can be really expensive on top of paying for like everything else, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But so I'm gonna keep color. I'm gonna keep the option open and maybe do what I did with Reclaiming Godhood 1, where, you know, I ended up reprinting it and getting it colored and then reprinted it in color, where originally it was just black and white.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, and it's going to be kind of interesting because that is always a thing to be considered, how it's going to be presented, and you know that versus your budget has a lot to do with how a book is going to appear.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of interesting to see how this is all going to turn out. Now, this has to do with a misfit friends who started a metal band. Are you a metal band fan?
Yes, actually, like I said earlier, this is based off of a lot of my high school experiences.
Mm-hmm.
I actually was in a metal band in high school with a bunch of friends, and I pay a lot of homage to it. Like when we used to jam back in the day, we used to play at my friend Roger's garage, and we put a sign in there in duct tape calling it the Beat Lab, and
mm-hmm.
I put the Beat Lab in this book.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like it's a lot of homage to like a lot of me, you know, playing in metal, being part of the, you know, the communities of the Alphabet Crew and everything.
Mm-hmm. It's really fascinating. I don't think people really realize when you're going through high school how formative a time of your life that is. You know, Buffy the Vampire Slayer was set in high school, and a lot of people I know would relate to different characters. And you talked about the fact that you played. What did you play?
So I played a little bit of bass. A little bit of guitar, but in the metal band, I played bass.
Okay.
The first song I fully learned how to play was Iron Tusk by Mastodon.
Okay, and let's see. A lot of this is autobiographical. Is one of the characters based on you in particular, or
so? A lot of the characters are. Uh-huh. I didn't base one on me. A lot of them are based off of a lot of my friends, and
mm-hmm.
I did deal with a lot of similar situations that are presented into this book, mm-hmm. and. One of the, like, as you know, as you watch the video, it explains about the characters. There's Ellipsis or Chloe Williams, but she goes by Ellipsis because that's going to be her stage name for when she becomes, you know, big and famous. And she's the guitarist and she's really protective of over her friends. And there's Alicia Cho, who is kind of like a nerdy girl who plays metal music to unwind. And then there's the rich kid. And the bully of the school, Katie Horde, who has a social status to uphold.
Mm-hmm.
And so she can't be seen with her non-rich friends. So she plays in this band in secret with her real friends. And I actually dealt with that in high school. I had a friend like that who was too embarrassed to be seen with us inside of school because mm-hmm. of their social status.
Mm-hmm.
But they would hang out with us outside of school.
Hmm. Interesting. Interesting. Because, you know, the reason I asked that question is because one of the very first interviews I ever did was with David Peterson from Mouse Guard. And I asked him, I said, what are the characters? Who are they based on? Are they like King Arthur's Round Table? And he said, no, they're my friends. And so you're following a good tradition here, a one that is successful to bring in real people. Because when you know the people, you'll know how they respond.
Yeah, I think that's why a lot of people will base characters also off of people they know, is because they know that person well enough, and they know, you know, how a character is going to react in a situation because they've known their friends for so long or their family.
Mm-hmm. So that'll be good. That's interesting, because I bet some of your friends will recognize certain things that go on, and certain people and situations that go on because of high school. If they went through that with you, the rest of us are all kind of looking at it from the outside. But it's pretty interesting to see, because now you mentioned Ellipsis is one of them, and you mentioned a couple of the others. There's a principal involved. There's just a couple other characters. Do you want to kind of go down the other characters in the book?
Yeah. So we have those are the main core bandmates, and then Ellipsis's girlfriend Marilyn Penhurst. She appears 3 years after. She just appears, and after she's been declared dead in a car accident, you know, they never found her body. Mm-hmm. But she was declared dead because they found the dead bodies of her parents, and then she just shows up, and she has kind of like a secret agenda that she's not letting anyone know, and she's looking for this necromancer cult, and that'll bring me to the next character, which is the Stag, and he's the leader of the necromancer cult, and he's been trying to use his power to reincarnate the first necromancer. Mm. And he's been trying to use Marilyn's body to do that.
Okay. Now, of course, this is where you're getting off into the supernatural stuff. This didn't actually happen in your high school, right?
No, definitely not.
Okay. Because if you said it did, I'd be a little astonished. So that'll date me again. Really? In high school? Because, like I said, high school is this strange experience for so many of us. You know, is this where we suddenly are exposed basically to the real world, and there's all kinds of things happening to us? You know, we're becoming adults, we're interacting with people, we're beginning to recognize, you talked about social status, we're beginning to recognize where we're going to fit when we're unleashed on the world, where we're likely to be as far as social status goes and stuff. So that high school is that very unique place. So I'm always interested in that coming of age kind of stuff. And it's really interesting to see, you know, I love the characters who don't want to be seen with the others. That I, like you said, I knew people who were that way. They wanted to hang out with people, but they didn't do it because they didn't want their social status affected. But they would do, if nobody was around, they would interact with other people. But not all the time. So that's kind of an interesting thing. I get a kick out of it, too. I need to ask you, too, because the artwork in this one has a lot more anime influence than some of your other stuff in the past. Was that intentional?
So, yes, it was. Originally, one of my friends was going to work on the book, but she ended up becoming too busy. She actually did a lot of the original artwork and character samplers for, you know, character designs for the book, and she just got too busy to work on it. But I ended up finding the artist who did the book, Tim Sparvero. I'm sorry, Tim, if I butchered your last name. And he's in one of the comic book groups on Facebook I'm in, and he usually does more lewd stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And even though that doesn't bother me at all, I really liked his art style, and I asked him, I was like, hey, you know, I have this book. It's not something that, you know, you usually work on, but I really like your art style, and I just feel that the art style kind of mashes with the aesthetic a bit better. You know, like the whole, you know, coming of age in high school, you know, because you see a lot of mangas and animes that are really close to that too, you know? So, mm-hmm. you know, it's, and the manga art style is actually really popular for the demographic I'm trying to go for. So I'm hoping to kind of open the doors a bit more with this book, you know?
Mm-hmm. So it's a year after a younger demographic?
Yeah. So I'm hoping to shoot between, like, get in between, like, the teens and the young adults, you know?
Mm-hmm. Because, mm-hmm. well, let me tell you something. Younger reader stuff is just going crazy. I mean, like, you know, if you get to the really young, what they call, well, you know, all ages, and some people mean that, that means you're being talked down to. But honest to goodness, if you go, like, into Target or other stores, you'll see lots and lots of aisles with all ages or young readers stuff in there. Mm-hmm. And I think the age group you're after, too, is another burgeoning group. I think comics, for a long time, abandoned those people and went for the older readers, because those are the people who tend to buy the books these days. But I think what's happening is comics are kind of becoming popular with them again.
Yeah, so I did a lot of research into that too, and what I've learned is that a lot of the problems is that you have all these people who have been writing books for so long, you know, and the market just kind of took over, and like everyone's talking about how comics are dead and you'll never, like, comics aren't, you know, doing well. And the reason being is because all these young readers who don't want to read about all these hyper extended macho men or over sexualized women, you know, they're switching to manga, which does have some of that stuff, but they're also switching to webcomic platforms, because a lot of it is, you know, like Marvel and DC. It's like, well, I want to get into reading Spider-Man. Where do I start? And you don't have, or Batman, you know, it's like, and you don't have like a official starting point, because American comics are weird and you have to read from this arc to this arc or this arc to this arc. And you can't, like, and there's not like just a, and like in manga, it's different. Like, it's like, where do I start? It's like, you get volume one, book one, that's where you start. And then you go in order.
Mm-hmm. Because it's like, if you ever watched like a Spider-Man cartoon, here's chapter 65 of 123. And I remember looking at that and going like, what? How am I ever going to understand that?
And it's just easier. And then it's the same with webcomics, because you can go to webcomics and be like, oh, I'm going to start page one.
Mm-hmm.
Or episode one is what they call them. And you can just start from there. American comics are just, they're just so weird. It's like, and it's mainly the Marvel and DC stuff, I believe, because like, I don't think Hellboy is like that, because like, you can start from volume one of Hellboy and go in order, and then, or, and a lot of Image comics are like that. Like, you can, you don't, you can start with issue one and read. You don't have to decode the weird, the code talking of, you know, the modern comic world.
Well, you know, it's like, for example, right now, DC is doing a whole bunch of 80th anniversary stories. And, you know, if a character has been around for 80 years, you know, how do you drop in the middle of a story with characters like that? So, you know, I just got the Aquaman one, and I started to read it, and, you know, they were doing, the covers were from all different decades. There was Aquaman, even back in the 1940s, there was Aquaman. And so I've been reading some of the stories, and it's kind of an interesting, for me, it's an interesting thing to get a historical perspective. But if you're somebody else who, let's say, you know, you haven't heard much of Aquaman, and suddenly you get dropped in the middle of this whole story, how in the world do you know what's going on? I don't know. Because honestly, Arthur Curry is the king of Atlantis, and he's not. He's married to Mira, and he's not. He's got a son, and he doesn't. And, right. You know, it just depends on what story you're dropping into to figure out what in the heck is going on with him. So I think you're doing a smart thing. Let's start somewhere and begin. So, but on the other hand, I have to disagree with you on one place. There's a show called The Last Airbender. And I have yet to see that first episode. And so since I haven't seen the first episode, I'm kind of I haven't been watching that whenever it comes on, or whenever I have some friends that want to watch it, and I go, well, I haven't seen the first episode. I don't know what's going on. And so I'm tempted sometimes just to buy the DVDs and watch that first episode.
Oh, I would recommend it. They're really good.
Because they had the girl that followed. I can't remember what that was called. But
The Legend of Korra, I believe.
Yeah, that's the ones. And so all those things have kind of been away from me because of, just like with the comics, I haven't seen that first episode. And so until I see that, I'm kind of saying I'm not gonna get. I don't want to drop into something I don't understand what's going on. So that's what I'm going to do with that. But you don't have that problem, thankfully. You're starting right from the beginning. You're introducing the characters. And even the ones that have a history, you're explaining the history. So people don't have to be afraid of looking in and saying, oh, no, I won't understand everything.
Right.
So I like that about that. Now, I've got to talk about hands. Because one of the things that this book does a lot, our disembodied hands walking around, shaking hands, and like the old Joker gag, pulling it off. Mm-hmm. And even in the logo for the book has a green hand doing the V and sever, which I get a kick out of. So dismembered hands have a lot to do with what's going on. Now, I say that, and the truth of the matter is that we don't see that as much as I'm making it sound like it. There are parts in which there are hands that play a role to it, but it's not as much as I'm sure I'm exaggerating that too much. But I just find it interesting because I always, like, way back in the Addams Family, they would have it, who was a disembodied hand.
Mm-hmm.
And I always got a kick out of that. Was it in any way like an inspiration for that, or was that something?
Like, a lot of the inspiration from it actually is from like the Evil Dead.
Mm-hmm.
I draw a lot of my influence from Sam Raimi in this because, like, and if you see, like, if you guys look at the Kickstarter covers, I have an Evil Dead homage Kickstarter exclusive cover you can get.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where, you know, like, a lot of that comes from Evil Dead, and just like, you know, when Bruce Campbell had to chop off his hand and it was running around and he had to fight it, and it was just that's where a lot of it honestly comes from.
Okay,
the Evil Dead, it's one of my biggest influences. And yeah, there are a lot of disembodied hands, and the reason being is so Marilyn, the character who was she has a little bit of necromancer powers, but she's not powerful enough to raise the dead, so she can only reanimate like small things, so she just kind of reanimates zombie hands.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Now, of course, that leads me to ask another question. When the group sings and they you have like a rehearsal going on, is that an actual song, or is that a made-up song? We don't have music to it yet.
So it was actually one of the old songs I wrote in high school with friends. And I kind of thought it would be a cool little narrative bit to do, you know, like to give people an image of where it's like, where it's almost like, you know, like in a movie where it cuts to a song during like a very serious part, you know. Mm-hmm. And I kind of wanted to give that kind of feel to the book. And one of my editors, Chuck Pinho, he said that it was a really cool kind of and very different kind of thing he's seen in comics. But he said he really liked it a bit.
Hmm. Now, you know, a lot of times in comics, I see creators putting playlists that you should be listening to when you read the book. Do you have a playlist that people should listen to when they're reading this book?
Not until I can re-get access to all of my old songs.
Well, are they somewhere else? I mean, are they in storage or something?
They're somewhere in a digital archive at my friend Roger's. But if there are songs you want to listen to, maybe I can compile something. But like, one of my biggest, like, this is based off of like heavy metal, and one of my biggest metal influences was Dio.
Mm.
Dio is one and still, you know, rest in peace, but he is still my favorite metal composer. And like, I also, in the Kickstarter, we also have a Dio album book cover dedication, you know? So we have a lot of cool covers, honestly.
Cool. Very good. Cause when, you know, when I read the lyrics, they'll often rhyme, you know, like just one that says, "You think you can hide from me? I have it on good authority. You know where I can find the pedigree." You know, and I'm always kind of, I know that there is music supposed to go with it. The way that it goes, I'm just convinced someplace you've got that. It'd be fun if sometime you would do like a record it and put it out someplace so people could listen to it as they read it.
We definitely will. Actually, I've already talked to my friend Roger. I'm still really good friends with him, even though we don't play music together. We're still like really good friends, and he's in a metal band, and they're actually going to be compiling the songs that are going to be featured in these three books. And cool. He's going to help compose them, and the metal band's going to have, we'll have three tracks hopefully that people will be able to play, because that narration part I did, I want to put it in all three books. Like, but it'll be a different song for each book.
Okay, so that'd be cool. So you could do like a mini disc. Oh, good. That'd be fun to do, because I noticed during the video, when you're talking, you've got heavy metal in the background, and it doesn't faze you to talk over it. So you're very comfortable with that. I got a kick out of that when I was watching it. I thought that's kind of fun. Because, you know, if I was doing it, I'd have to turn that down so I can be heard. But you're just, you're very comfortably talking right over the heavy metal music. So I got a kick out of that. I thought that was kind of funny. Now, there's another anime thing that I got a kick out of. If you've ever read anime books, you know that when somebody dies, their eyes have X's in place of eyes.
Oh, yep.
And in this book, you got a girl by the name of Marion, I think it is. But she goes by Mare, which made me think of Nightmare. So, and she has eyes that are X's, but they're not the standard small X. They actually, they're in place of the pupils of the eye. There's an X in each eye. And so I was like, oh, that's so interesting. That's kind of a movement away from some of what the anime does. Was that done intentionally? Was that something you came up with?
So, if you actually also look at Ellipsis, she has stars in her eyes. So this was part of the original design. I wanted the main characters to have something cool, like, you know, different effects in their eyes to show that they were the main characters of the story. But I also wanted, it was kind of more of like a little cutesy anime kind of thing that I thought would be a fun thing to do. And so the original designs that my friend Camry did, she put stars in Ellipsis's eyes and she put X's in Marilyn's. And I thought that the new artist was just going to do regular eyes, but he kept the X's and the stars in Ellipsis's eyes, which I was really happy about. Because I thought he was just going to change them back to regular eyes, but he didn't. And I really
There's some regular eyes that appear in there, and different characters. It just depends on the circumstance. But I have to ask Ellipsis, which is a, you know, as a grammar Nazi as I am. Ellipses and all that stuff. I'm endlessly talking about ellipses with people. You know, that an ellipsis, you should have an ellipsis there and you shouldn't have it there kind of all the time. So when I see the word ellipses like that, I got a huge kick out of the fact that her stage name is Ellipsis. Is that on why did she choose that name? I just have to ask.
There's actually a funny story behind that. So Ellipsis is, even though she plays heavy metal now, she has a very like punk rocker attitude. And the reason she calls herself Ellipsis is because she considers it punk to use correct grammar because everyone else is not using it anymore, you know?
Okay, that's funny. I have to, you know, as somebody who spends a lot of time telling people how grammar is supposed to work, that makes me laugh. That is funny because you don't know. One of the things that drives me nuts about comic books is that grammar is out the window. It's kind of like, you know, we do what we feel like. And if you don't feel like it, well, we won't bother. And I always think that that prevents people from reading stories a lot of the times, because let's face it, you run into something that suddenly doesn't make sense. I always tell the example is, you know, let's eat comma grandpa or let's eat grandpa are two different, you know, sentences, and the only difference is a comma.
Right.
And my roommate got me a shirt that says, punctuation saves lives. And it's based on that particular one. And so I get a kick that has to do with that. Somebody thinks it's rebellious to actually follow the rules of grammar. I love that.
Yeah, no. So it, and like to touch on that, I did hire two editors for this book mm-hmm. because I wanted to make sure that it was properly done.
Mm-hmm.
I had a editor go through and, Katrina Rowitz went through the first script
mm-hmm.
and edited everything. And then when Tim, after he drew and lettered everything, I had Chuck go through. Chuck actually mainly did it to me as a favor. He was like, you know what? I'll go through it for you just because, you know, we're friends. And I was like, oh, if you want to do that, that's perfectly fine. I'd greatly appreciate it. And so he went through and he was like, hey, here's all what's wrong with this. And so hopefully that won't be a big issue in this book because I made sure that we.
Yeah, it's much better than many indie comics are. Many indie comics, I literally come to sentences and I go, what is that supposed to say? What does that mean? And so for me, I really want to have people understand so they don't stop. Because if you hit that roadblock too many times, people just give up and say, well, I'll move on to something else that makes sense. So you've got to be careful of that. But I love that whole it's rebellious to follow the rules of grammar. I'm gonna be thinking about that for the next couple of days for sure. I just find that wonderful.
Yeah, that's and a great so thing. Yeah, so I am hoping that this book will not have that problem because
oh no,
I hired two editors.
That's really good because the ellipses and stuff are done right in here and stuff like that. So I just get a huge kick out of the various. It's like that is going to enchant me for the next several days. I just know it because that's so funny about that. Now, as far as other things that are going on in the book, because three issues and the page, you've got what, 30, how many pages of story in each issue?
So I'm not sure, but this first book has 37 pages. So it's a pretty big book.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost at a graphic novel length, which is usually about 40 pages, I think.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So the second book will probably be at least 37, if not longer.
Wow.
Same with the third book. So these will be pretty big books.
Wow. That's good. So, okay. Let me once again tell people that this is going to conclude if you reach your funding goal of $1,500 by Saturday, October 2 at 5:04 a.m. Eastern Time. So that'll be something good. Now, let's talk a little bit about the pledges. As I often tell people, I can't always buy the hardcovers that I would love or the paper editions that I would love because my computer hard drive now has more room than my shelf space.
Right.
So I ordered the hands-free book, it's called, which I got a kick out. I think that's a funny way to do it. And the other one is hands-on physical book, which I like. There's all these hand things, because that's why the hands in the book. There's sticky fingers, get a PDF as well as a physical copy, Grave Robbers, and 3-bit phalange, and I never understand that word. What a phalange.
Yeah. It's just another, it's the scientific name for fingers.
Oh, okay. Okay, and then we got Fred Got Fingers. You can
join
him.
That's actually a reference to... Marilyn's right-hand man is a... Well, right hand is a hand that she calls Fred.
Oh.
And that's actually a movie reference to Freddy Got Fingered. It was it was just too funny to not do.
That's great. That's great. Talented phalanges. Severed bits is the $100 one. Become a victim. $200. Boy, you get everything for that one for $200. Let's see. Some of these we still got open spaces on. You know, some of the I Want Them All, you've got three that's already taken that. Two backers that got the Fred Got Fingers one. So there's room, but you've got some wonderful levels, and I think that's going to be a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. And there's still 23 left for the Grave Robber special, mm-hmm. which comes with a pretty good chunk of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So
just be sure to read that on the website. It's going to be good. Again, if you go to Kickstarter.com, and if you want to get to this particular one, you go Sever1-, a metal-inspired horror romance. I want to make sure people find it. That's an important thing to do. So that's a good thing. So, okay, so this is going to be going on, and you've got them all done, as we mentioned already.
Yeah, so there, the first book is 100% done.
Mm-hmm.
You guys, if you guys back and we fund, you will get your book. There's mm-hmm. not going to be any more, any pre-production
delay, you
know, post-production after the Kickstarter starts. Okay. Like I know I've done that before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Reclaiming Godhood books were all about getting funding to make the book and to ship it out.
Mm-hmm.
I took the opposite route this time because I got sick of running into problems. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you recall, but Reclaiming Godhood 3, when I had the Kickstarter running, it got delayed by almost 6 months because mm-hmm. my colorist I hired, he only did half the book, and mm-hmm. then he ran away with my money and never finished it. So
great.
It put me so far behind. I actually had to refund a lot of people because they were like, "We're sick of waiting. Can you give us a refund?" And I was like, "Yes." I understand. I was like, "Can you at least leave me your email address and I'll give you a free PDF book?"
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which I also sent out to them when I sent out rewards.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, well, and so from now on, I'm going to be taking this route. I'm going to make sure that the book is 100% done.
Ah.
Oh, so that people will get their books and mm-hmm. people will.
I love everything. To hear that.
Yeah.
I love to hear that because there are so many people. I mean, there are some Kickstarter campaigns that I have given money to, I have never gotten anything from. And I could name names, but I won't as far as that goes. But to me, I think the safest way to do it is just the way you do it. Have it done before you get going, or at least just as close as you can so that it'll be finished at the right time.
So right.
Now, you mentioned one of the levels was going to be to get the coloring done. Which level is that?
So it's not going to be a level. It's going to be a stretch goal. And
gotcha.
I haven't announced the money stretch goals yet. I've mm-hmm. announced backer stretch goals,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. and I'm not gonna unlock. I'm not gonna announce the money stretch goals until we hit funding.
Gotcha. Okay, that's a smart idea.
As soon as we hit funding, and as soon as we're funded, I will start putting stuff. I will start announcing the Kickstarter like. Beyond stretch goals, and one of them will be to get the book into color.
Okay, and of course that'll be a delay because it's not already colored.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I kind of plan for that. So I've already talked to a colorist. I already have someone in mind, and they will be able to have it done within the month. You know,
I have to congratulate you because there's so many people who do this kind of stuff and they have no idea how they're going to fulfill, and you know, Kickstarter has gotten kind of nasty about that. If you don't fulfill one Kickstarter, they won't let you start another because some people get like three or four Kickstarters in and they still haven't fulfilled. So, boy, I have to congratulate you on that. Boy, I wish more people thought that way.
Yeah, I've also learned a lot from my last two Kickstarters, you know, from Reclaiming Godhood and being unprepared and being young, you know, like I've gained a lot of wisdom since the Reclaiming Godhood Kickstarter stuff.
Well, good. Well, that's hopefully so. I wish there are a lot of people who could still learn a lot of stuff that you probably have already picked up, which is good. Mm-hmm. Now, as always, I'm sure you've got other irons in the fire. Are there other projects you're working on that we should be familiar with?
Yeah, you know, so there is going to be – I'm going to be pumping out a lot of stuff this year. I have a 5-part miniseries that the first book will be done hopefully by October, I think. Mm. It's called My Grandmother is a Demon Slayer.
Okay.
And it's about this girl named Panzer Hatchet, and she goes by Paz because she hates that her dad named her Panzer. Because he was a World War enthusiast, and the Panzer tank was one of his things. So he's I'm going to name my daughter Panzer. And
oh, boy.
So she goes by Paz, and she is part of this family who has these that when they become of age, they, like, their tradition was they would go kill their first demon when they became of age, and you would take a body part of it and fuse with the demon, and you would become a demon hunter. However, Paz, her mother, took the opposite route. She wanted to raise her family without having to worry about, you know, demons or anyone trying to kill them. So until one day she totally just spaces it, and there's this demon overlord named Azeron who finds the family, and when Paz comes to, like, it's her birthday, so it's her coming of age ceremony, but they don't do it because, you know, she's just trying to live her mother wants her kids to live normal lives. And Paz comes down, and this demon has killed her family. And she ends up slaying this demon and absorbing it after losing her arm. And then she goes to live with her grandma, where she learns all about her family's past.
Okay. Very good. So that'll be kind of fun. So is that going to be kickstarted?
Yeah, so it will be kickstarted. And it's going to be the same deal as it is with Sever. The book's going to be 100% done. You're going to get your books. There will be lots of cool rewards. And I also have a horror flip book I'm going to be releasing. And it's going to be one of those, like, flip books where you have it one way and then you can flip it over and read the other book the other way. And that's going to be a flip book. And it's going to have two horror stories. One is called It Was Nobody, which is about this kid who is being raised in an abusive household, and he's already tried to go to CPS to get help, but they are refusing to help him, and his parents are drug addicts, and they abuse him. And then finally, like, when he has no place to go or no one to help him, this interdimensional being shows up called Nobody, and he helps the kid deal with his problems.
Okay, that's kind of interesting, because usually those kinds of characters are not helpful. They're antagonists or people who go against them. So it'll be nice to see something a little different like that. That'll be great.
And I will say that he does help them brutally. So,
whoa, okay.
There will be a lot of, like, blood and gore in the book.
Okay. Something to look forward to. Anything else that's going on?
Oh, yeah. And the other side of that book is going to be Outwash Onslaught. And it's going to be it's a story from a slasher's perspective. And what actually happens is that this guy, his name's Tristan... Trevor Howell. His name's Trevor Howell. And he was a rich guy. And he took these... He tracked down treasure down in out in the sea. And this captain takes him out there. And when they discover the treasure, the captain kills him with a knife that was in the treasure chest. And the knife is actually harboring this demon who has kept Howell alive as he walked the ocean floor trying to get his... And he ends up back in the town about 10 years later And it takes place in the 80s. So he walked along the ocean floor about 10 years to get back to land. And he comes to get his revenge on the people that did him wrong.
Mm. Cool. That'll be interesting. And so when do you figure that Kickstarter is going to hit?
So I'm not sure. I just, half of the book, it's in production right now. So the It Was Nobody is in production right now. And the Outwash Onslaught, I'm currently looking for an artist to take it over.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last thing I have is Blade of the Undying, which I think we've talked about before. Okay. And it's a dark fantasy based off of Arthurian lore. And it's takes place during the fall of the Round Table, and it kind of has like a reverse kind of spin on the, it has a darker spin on the series where Merlin starts taking up necromancy and he becomes corrupted and he is waging war upon the land with the undead hordes and killed the table, the Round Table.
Okay. So that'll be an interesting story. All those good things sound really interesting. Now, if we want to keep up with you on social media, how do we do that?
So you can add me regularly on Facebook, just Braden Cox. I'll usually accept friend requests from most people. You can find me, you can go to my comic Facebook page, which is Braydoxian Studios, Braydoxian Studios.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can also find me on Instagram at Braydoxy.
Very cool. Well, again, let me point out that for that Kickstarter to be successful, you have to get $1,500 no later than Saturday, October 2, 5:04 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And, of course, you're well on your way to getting that, so I'm very optimistic that we're going to get there and we're going to get to see more of Severin and other good things, too. So I can tell you, Braden, it's always fun to talk with you, and you always come up with some really creative and interesting projects that I think is good for the medium. So I just want to tell you to keep going and much success.
Thanks, Wayne. Once again, thanks for having me on here for the, what is it, the fourth time now?
Something like that. I lost track. It's always fun, so I never keep track of these things. I don't count them, so very good. And that's it for this episode. Be back next time. I'll have another great interview with an excellent comics creator, something I'm sure you won't want to miss. But until then, keep reading your comics.
It's over, Joker.
Over? Why, my dear delusional Dark Knight, it hasn't even begun.